All right, we'll go ahead and get this meeting started. Welcome to the session on sober dating. And I am Rob Kay. I'm a sexaholic. And Marla will also be up here with us. And in the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. And the recorder will not be turned off during this session. So if you do not wish to be recorded, please don't come up and talk on the mic. But basically, we ask that those who choose to share step up to this microphone so that those who are listening to the recording can follow the discussion. All right, will you please join me in opening the session with the Serenity Prayer? Let's have a moment of silence. Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will be done.
All right. I'm going to read the essay purpose here before we get started. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others achieve sexual sobriety. And of course, the purpose of this is sobriety in dating. And what Marla and I are going to do is we're just going to share a little bit about our experience, strength, and hope in that realm of sober dating. And then we're going to open it up. And if some of you have had experience or questions or anything like that, please come up to the mic and do that. And we'll kind of limit those a little bit just for time's sake and for those who want to come up. So I'm going to let Marla start us off, and then I'll join in after her.
I'm Marla, grateful recovering sexaholic. Glad everybody is here this morning. We were discussing putting this topic together, and they looked at me and said, well, you know, you're co-chairing this. Are you sure you want to speak? I said, yes, it'll give me a chance to be somewhere where no one can bother me for about an hour. So, yeah, I'll take that opportunity. My experience briefly, just to kind of give you my background so you can understand. My parents separated when I was approximately 5 years old. They were divorced by the time I was seven. My father was most of my life physically unavailable. He traveled for work or other things. Both of my parents are emotionally unavailable people, although over the years that has changed somewhat. But that's what I grew up in. And I struggled with a lot of abandonment and rejection issues early on. So for me, it was about trying to gather attention, and not necessarily sexual attention, but just I wanted to feel special. I wanted someone to pay attention to me. And those are kind of the seeds that were planted that grew into my addiction. When I came into the program about 6.5 years ago, I came in because I had crossed what I had considered to be one of my lines, which was having an affair with a married coworker. And it wasn't that I had the affair that made me realize I had a problem. It was the fact that that affair partner wanted to become emotionally attached, and I didn't want that. And I knew something's wrong here. This doesn't have to be this difficult. And so I began my recovery journey at that point. Part of my recovery journey was also doing therapeutic work outside of recovery. And about 3 months into my recovery journey, my therapist looked at me one day and said, you need to have no contact with men. You need to dry out. And I smiled that sweet smile and turned my head to the side, you know, kind of like a dog does when he just looks at you like, okay, lady, whatever. And I said, I'll die without a man. I will die without contact with men. I will die without some kind of relationship, even if it's just in my head, which a lot of mine were. I'll die without that. And she just smiled and nodded at me like, sure, dear, you know, keep coming back. My boundaries were very strict that I was given. No contact period at all. No phone calls, no emails, no talking one-on-one with a man, whether it was at work, church, any other kind of social environment. I couldn't sit next to guys at church. I couldn't sit next to him if we went out to eat. Nothing. The only contact I had was with family members or direct superiors at work, but only in the context of a group setting and meetings. That was it. That was the only contact I had. And that was some of the hardest drying out that I had to do, because so much for me was about the emotional misconnection. It was not even so much about the physical contact, but the emotional misconnection. And until I dried out from that, I was of no use to anyone, least of all myself. I went through that period for approximately 6 months, one day at a time. My therapist, in conjunction with my sponsor, gave me no timeline about that. And about 6 months into that, I finally began to decide, you know, hey, what? I really like life without guys. You know, I have friends. I have interests. I have activities that I can go and do. That I had put everything on hold for my addiction, my lust, my fantasy. I had set it all aside. Family, friends, responsibilities in the community that I had, any kind of interest, always went on the back burner for the pursuit of lust, period. And so I got to a place about 6 months into that process, as I said, where I began to think, ooh, life is good. I have friends. I can go do things. And another 6 months went along. So I've been at this about a year, and I walk into my therapist's office one day, and she says, okay, it's time to start dating. Deer in the headlights, crickets. You know, I'm sorry, what? What was that? I didn't hear you correctly. I feel certain. You need to start dating. Okay, but see, we just went through a period where I'm supposed to stay away from them, and I'm kind of liking that. I think I'll stick with this. No, you really need to date. And I promise you, within 3 days of that particular session, guys started coming out of the woodwork like Pez out of a dispenser. I didn't know what to do with that. Didn't know what to do with that at all. One of the things that helped me in my dating process and in dating soberly was having that period of drying out, not just from the physical, but from the emotional. That is what worked for me. Something different may work for you, but that's the background that I came from. One of the things that that did in that year's period of time was allow me, through mainly the meeting process, the mixed meetings here in Nashville, to begin to see men as human beings, begin to form relationships with them which were solely based on friendship. No lust, no trying to figure out how I could conveniently run into them at the grocery store, no scheming or anything like that. It was being able to sit back, watch the people around me, listen to their stories, listen to them share about themselves, and for me to begin to form the idea that they are human just like me. They're not a man, I'm not a woman, we're all human beings on this journey, and they are worthy of respect and being treated with dignity. That year's drying out period allowed me to do that and gave me a great foundation to step into dating. My first dating experience did not go very, very well, only because that other individual had some issues with my boundaries. And that was okay. That did not make him a bad person. That just made us incompatible at that point. The second relationship that I came into in my dating experience, and this was about 6 months after I'd been given the go-ahead to, hey, go out there and date and find a guy, was probably the first true relationship that I had in my life. This was someone who also was on their own recovery journey, not necessarily in 12-step fellowship, but it was someone who was seeking to deal with their issues. And it was someone who could respect the fact that I had boundaries. And I'd never had that before. Never had I had that. And one thing that I came to notice at that point was I was starting to attract individuals to me that were quality people because I was a quality person at that point. I had boundaries. I had limitations. I respected myself. Even at that point, I can say I loved myself. And I wanted to take care of me and do what was best for me. That was a huge key. And once I had those things in place, I started attracting like individuals. You'll hear that in these rooms, like attracts like. And I can tell you that was definitely my experience. The more recovered and the more healthy I became, the more I attracted healthy people to me, not just in romantic relationships, but in friendships, working relationships, other areas of my life. That was very, very true. As I said, this second relationship, I realized probably for the first time in my life at about the age of 30 or 31 years old that I truly loved someone for them and they truly loved me for who I was. I would say that was probably my first true love experience. And it was definitely a gift of this program because we were past all of the superficial, I need to have sex with you to make a connection. I knew better. I had tools at that time in my toolbox to say, I know today for me, sex does not equal love. And I don't have to have sex to have an intimate and emotional relationship with you. That relationship also ended. And that was a very, very painful process for me. And that was the point in time where I learned in my recovery that pain was a necessary part of my process and a part of my journey. My addiction had sought to cover that pain up. And for the first time in my life, I was at a point of sobriety and consciousness being present in my world to know real pain. And I worked through that with my sponsor and with the help of others to process and grieve that loss as I truly needed to do in order to move on to another relationship and again be of use to myself and to other people. 4 years ago, coming up next weekend, I met my husband. Actually, that's not true. I met my husband the fall before that at a Halloween party. I had a 20-minute conversation with him in the church parking lot, inviting him to a singles party that night. I have absolutely no recollection of this conversation and proceeded to show up at the party with another man. The fact that we are married today is quite amazing. That following New Year's Eve, after having spent 2 days getting to the West Coast for Christmas and then 2 days getting back because you can't get from Spokane, Washington, can't get to Spokane, Washington from here very easily, I had a New Year's Eve party to go to, and I thought, you know, I flew in that morning from Chicago. I was tired. I'd had a horrible vacation. Had I not flown first class, compliments of my dad, I probably would have choked him after everything that happened. I didn't want to go to this party, but I thought, you know, if I just get dressed and I just go out there, I'm going to have a good time. I'm going to have a good time. And so I got dressed, and as I was walking out the door, my roommate at the time, who was also in this program, I looked at her, and I did this very dramatic swing out the door, and I said, I'm going to go meet the love of my life. Good night. And I walked out. May I suggest right here and now, be very, very careful what you ask for in making pronouncements. I got to that party that night, and the man who would be my husband happened to be there, and he saw me across the room, and literally, I was going around the wall, and he's like trying to cut me off at the pass, and I spent most of the night talking to him, and we danced most of the night. And then about 3 weeks later, coming into the football part of this analogy, he's like, let's get together, but he would never commit to making a date. And finally, I called him, and I said, look, dude, I'm watching football this weekend. You can come over, you cannot come over. I don't care. He showed up at my house, we watched football, and the rest is history. One of the great things about that was being able to say up front to him, this is who I am, these are my boundaries. I do not engage in these activities. And being able to share that with him and him saying, that's okay, I can respect that. And being treated with respect in return. We dated about a year and a half. Actually, we dated about 6 months. And then we got married. He proposed to me in the jewelry store because he did not want to put the ring on, let the lady check the size on my finger. He's like, no, I'm going to do that. So he proposed to me in the jewelry store. And a year after that, we were married, and we've been married almost 3 years. In that 18 months, I'm not going to lie to you and tell you, oh, we never had an issue with physical boundaries. That's unrealistic. Don't hear me say that, because we had challenges. And there were times that we had to take a step back and say, okay, I need to limit my contact with you. I can only see you once a week, or I can only talk to you once a day. Because again, for me and my disease, it was not so much about the physical contact as it was the emotional high and the emotional contact. I wanted constant phone calls. I wanted constant emails. I had to be very purposeful about that. And set some pretty strong boundaries at times. I cannot talk to you today. I cannot email you today. I can see you tomorrow. And making very, very sure for me that I did not allow myself to get sucked back into a position where my life was solely, only, and always about him. I had to be very, very purposeful about making my meetings, making my phone calls, meeting with my sponsees, continuing my service work. Those types of things, for me, were very, very crucial in my dating experience because I wasn't entirely focused and lusting after him as a person and lusting after him as a relationship. I had other avenues and other responsibilities that I needed to be present for. That was very, very important. One of the other things that greatly helped me was the fact that I could be completely honest with him about what I was thinking and feeling and saying, I cannot do this right now. That was huge. Him hawing around the subject, ignoring the subject, delaying the subject, did not work for me. I had to be open and honest and straightforward. That does not mean that the first time I met my husband, I told him my entire story. My husband still to this day does not know my entire story. It is not relevant to our current situation. But he knew enough to understand why I had the boundaries and why I had the things in place that I did, why this program, and I told him straight up front, this is priority number one. Anything I put before my recovery, I will lose. Recovery is always number one. You're a very close number two, but recovery is still number one. And now we have such a culture in our home, he'll look at me, have you been to a meeting this week? Because I think you really need one. You're a little crazy. You need to call somebody. Here's your phone. I'll dial a number. Just tell me a name. I'll pick one out. This is a program of rigorous honesty. You cannot date soberly without rigorous honesty. That has been my experience, and I know it has been the experience of others around me. And if you leave with nothing else, leave with that piece. Unless you are rigorously honest, unless you are working your program and making sure that it still remains the most important piece in your life, because whatever you put before recovery, you will lose. I have seen that happen in this program. That happened to me early on in my experience. You are not in a position to date soberly and have it be successful. And really, isn't that what we want? That's what we want. I'm very grateful I was not married when I came into this program. I sit around rooms with a lot of people, and working this convention and working with S&Ons, you hear stories that just break your heart. And I am so glad today I do not have that history. I was sober and working my way towards health before I ever went down this path. And it's the path I recommend, mainly because it's the one I took. But it, you know, I'm very grateful that that was not my experience. And the more you can do for yourself, the better spouse you will make. That's been my experience too. I think that's all I have to share, so I'm going to turn this over to Rob. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Marla. She shared a lot of stuff that I was going to share, so that can make mine shorter. You know, when I do talks like this, I write all these little notes down, and I think, well, those are going to be great points to hit, and I get up here, and I never really go by my notes, so it'll be whatever God wants to come out of my mouth today, so who knows? It may be new to me. I mean, all I can share is my experience on dating. I have been sober, recovering sober since January of 97, and I woke up this morning and looked at the calendar and realized actually today would be my sobriety date. So by the grace of God in this program, and I must say when I first started SA, I didn't know what I was getting into because I wasn't familiar with 12-step programs. So I thought, you know, it's just one of those things that you just kind of graduate from and, you know, work like a step a week and graduate in 3 months and go on with your life. And so here I am 11 years later and, you know, I got a lot more than I bargained for in this program. And I am eternally grateful for that. I just wanted to stop masturbating. That was pretty much my issue coming in. You know, I had a lot of fantasy with that. Sure, that was part of my recovery, but so much more as I have a family that I'm growing up with today, you know, a place that I can be rigorously honest, like Marla said, you know, and, you know, I came in emotionally and socially stunted probably about, you know, fourth or fifth grade emotionally, you know, and I've grown up in this program and had to ask, you know, basic questions on how do I do life, you know. I remember sitting in my therapist's office and, you know, we went through a adolescent teenage sexuality book with my therapist because I never had that stuff growing up, you know. I never had that father figure that would sit down and tell me that stuff, you know. And it was awkward, yes, but it was a wonderful healing thing in a healthy environment to talk about sexuality. And as our program gets more mature, because it's still relatively young, you know, I would hope that we would progress more to talking about what does it mean in healthy sexuality in recovery. Unfortunately, we haven't got a lot to that point yet. We're starting to get there, but, you know, we're really good at getting sober and then, you know, get to that point, now what? You know, I'm a sexual being. What do I do with that? I'm good at not doing certain things, but how do I, you know? And so that's not what I'm talking about today, but that's been part of my journey, too, is kind of exploring that as well. And luckily, God has put some people in my life in this program that have helped me kind of walk through that stuff. Because it's scary when you're kind of out there in this no man's land, you know, and doing things like that. When I first started this program, like I said, I just thought I'd be in and out and quick and on my way. And, you know, because it was suggested that I not start any new relationships for a year, I wanted to start relationships as soon as possible. Because that's what good addicts do. We try and go opposite of what's suggested of us. But pretty quickly into that first year of recovery, much like Marla was saying, I really enjoyed being single. It was a lot easier. On some level, I could be somewhat selfish and it was okay. I could just focus on me and my recovery and that was fine. And, you know, I really liked it. I can go places whenever I want to. I don't have to check in, you know, well, my sponsor, but I don't have to check in with a significant other and thing like that. And go to meetings whenever I want to, don't have to explain, and that sort of thing. And it became really easy. And I am prone to getting into ruts really easy. And so after 4 years of sobriety, my sponsor finally said, you need to start dating. And I hadn't realized, wow, 4 years, you know, I was just really fine with not dating, you know. I was interacting with females in the program. That was great. You know, I was learning how to do that in a healthy way and not objectify them. But I became really comfortable with just kind of shutting down that whole sexuality or, you know, attraction side of me. You know, for a long time for me, I had this enmeshment of what is lust and what is natural attraction. For me, I lumped them all together, and whenever I saw somebody as attractive, I just claimed it as lust and cast it out and moved on, and so I never allowed myself to become attracted to any of the women that were in my social circle. So after my sponsor kept trying to prompt me over and over again to date, and I wouldn't get out there and do it, he finally said, "Don't call me again until you get a date with this woman." And that angered me, and it stirred up a lot of my father issues. But he was right, and that was what I needed to kind of give me that kick out of the nest, so to speak. And it with dating, and actually I've been married now for a couple of years, but I've realized that, you know, there's certain like plateaus in recovery or progress stages, and you know, I'll learn all this stuff, and it gets really comfortable. Man, I feel really healthy. I'm right here, you know. And then God says, "Okay, now time for the next level. You know, time to start dating." Wow, now I feel really unhealthy, you know. And then I did that for a while. I was like, "Oh, I'm feeling pretty good, man. I'm pretty healthy with this stuff." God said, "Now get married." And now I feel like I'm the most unhealthy person with my selfishness and all that stuff just glaring me in the face. But so anyway, I started dating, or at least calling women on the phone and asking them out for dates. And, you know, it started off as really, you know, mild things. Go out to the park and walk. You know, I had a dog, and so I'd go walk my dog and invite somebody to come along. You know, things like that. Really low-pressure situations, which I need. I grew up with extremely low self-esteem, so I never did a lot of dating anyway growing up. I give a lot of power to women, you know, and if I get affirmation, then somehow I'm a better person for it. And so I had a lot of that stuff to work through, which was good. And my sponsor was right. I needed to get out there. I had some friend in the program, a woman friend in the program, and she had some other friends that she was wanting to set me up with on blind dates. And I thought, well, you know, my sponsor wants me to date, so I'm open to that. She knows that I'm in recovery, so, you know. So I remember the first one that she set me up with. I met her at a coffee house, and she just kind of described herself. She had red hair and so forth. And so I get there, and the only girl with red hair is sitting out on the patio, and she's smoking a cigarette, which is fine, but I'm not a smoker. She's got, you know, a tattoo across the back of her neck, and you know, and her it's red hair, but it's all kind of wild, and you know, which is fine, but that's just not my personality. And so my first reaction when I saw who it was and she didn't see me yet was like, "I'm just going to get back in my car and I'm going to drive off." And I thought, she'll never know. She doesn't know who I am and it's fine. And whatever got me out of my car, I parked it and walked across the street and talked with her. And it was a really uncomfortable hour that we spent together because we had absolutely nothing in common. But it was a great step for me to try something new. And makes a great story now, too. You know, I just took whatever opportunities were out there. Somebody said, "Hey, you know, got this person." Sure, you know. I had my boundaries. The best thing that worked for me was kind of bookending dates. With my sponsor says, "Hey, I'm getting ready to go on this date. This is what we're planning to do." You know, and after the date, check in with him as well. And that has really helped because I have that accountability. And I was so nervous anyways because I'd got comfortable by myself in sobriety. What do I do with a woman? I don't know, you know. What do I do if, you know, I'm attracted to her? Or what if I do, heaven forbid, if I feel like I'm starting to get aroused because I'm around an attractive woman, you know. Those are all things I had to struggle with, you know. And, you know, in my mind, I thought my sponsor would say, "Oh, well, that's just lust." But he would always say, "Sounds like a natural reaction to being around an attractive woman." I was like, okay. You know, so he's very affirming in that. And that's exactly what I needed. Let me look at my notes here and see where I'm at. I dated a few of those. And I ended up dating another woman, for about 3 years. And it was kind of a friend of a friend. And we knew each other for a little bit. And we started dating. We dated kind of off and on for about 3 years. And, of course, in my mind, wow, 3 years, this has got to be the woman that I marry. And what I realized, at least mainly towards the end of that relationship, with the help of my sponsor, was that I was trying to force the situation. You know, I was trying to, because we had been such good friends before, in my mind that felt like we have such a great friendship, surely that means that we need to be married. And I was trying to, you know, cram that square peg into a round hole and make it work for 3 years and driving myself crazy. My sponsor never said, "I told you so." And he never told me, you know, specifically, "Get out of this relationship." You know, we had good boundaries, you know, as far as sobriety and everything like that. So it wasn't anything particularly like that. It was just trying to force the situation, you know. And I'd always kind of thought, well, you know I want to be married. You know, so surely this has got to be the person. And so when I ended up, finally, we broke it off. And, you know, I thought, well, that's probably going to be the end of my world there, you know. I dated somebody 3 years, it didn't work out. you know, I don't want to jump back into another relationship and, you know, have to go through that whole process of getting to know somebody just to get to the end and find out that it's not going to work out, you know. I was kind of at that point. So it took a while to kind of come down from that. I had another dating relationship where I started dating this woman, then she ended up going back with her ex-boyfriend. And that brought up all my childhood stuff of all feeling like, you know, I'm always second place and there's always somebody better than me. You know, when I went into a meeting just bawling and crying and talking about it. And, you know, and man, I'm glad I have a place to do that. You know, it's not like I can sit around with the guys watching the game and just start bawling and crying. You know, talk about my childhood issues. It's not really the place. So I am so grateful for these rooms. And so after that and the three-year relationship and all that ended, you know, I finally thought, well, I want to be married. I want to be in a relationship. But, you know, it's like, how do I cut out that long, you know? And so I started talking with my sponsor and started talking about online dating. And it freaked me out because I hear all the people in the meetings talking about, you know, internet and all the evils of that and stuff. And thankfully, that had not been a part of my bottom line as of yet, and hopefully it won't be. But, you know, so I signed up for an internet service, and I thought my sponsor was just going to bash me and say, "What the heck are you doing?" You know, but he was very encouraging. We set up very strict boundaries around that, and I ended up meeting my wife online, and we dated for a few months and then got married, and you know, and that's been a whole interesting thing in itself, because now, like I said, there's another level of, you know, I thought it was so healthy, and now I'm married, and I don't feel really that healthy anymore as far as my character defects are in my face all the time. And, you know, the ironic thing is, I think we hosted the meeting here about 2 years ago in this same facility, and we had a panel discussion for sober dating or dating in recovery in the big room. And I was on that panel with some other people, you know. And so here I am 2 years later on the other side of that, being married, and whether you want to call it my disease, irony, fate, whatever, or just my absent-mindedness, I was rushing to get out of the house this morning. I walked out and didn't even put my ring on this morning, and I'm coming to talk about it. So hopefully my wife doesn't listen to the recording. But, I will say that the main thing, and Marla touched on this, is that, you know, the more that I work on myself and the healthier I get, the healthier people I attract. You know, the sicker I am, the sicker people I attract. And I think about it, it's like, if I'm a sick person, I want nothing to do with a healthy person. They got too many boundaries. You know, and if I'm a healthy person, I want nothing to do with a sick person because they're just sick. And so I attract the people that are on the same level as me. And so kind of my mentality was, well, the healthier I get, then the healthier people I'm going to attract. And I took that a little bit too far. I went 4 years before I started dating, but, you know, that was just my journey. And the honesty thing, you know, sometimes I'll be like, I don't know, you know, what to do here, or this and that, or, you know, last night we were kissing, was that okay? Was that not okay? You know, and the thing that I had to keep resorting to, as long as I keep talking about what's going on, if I'm doing something wrong, somebody's going to tell me that. And whether it's my sponsor, and I had a really close circle of friends, about four or five guys, and my sponsor, that kind of that inner circle that I would tell them pretty much all the nitty-gritty details. Then I had the wider group that I would kind of share more in general with, just to have that safety net. But I thought, wow, you know, because when we started getting further along in dating, and of course some of the physical intimacy as far as kissing and hugging, that sort of thing, you know, in sobriety, I'm going, I don't know what's okay, what's not okay. And, you know, as long as I keep talking about that with somebody, if I'm going down the wrong path, I know that they're going to tell me, well, you need to watch this. And did I do it perfectly? Absolutely not. I think if you have the mentality that you're going to date perfectly in this program, then you're going to be severely disappointed. Because it's just not going to be there. There's so many unknowns, and what I realize is more and more as I've been in recovery is things are less and less black and white, and they're more and more gray. And, sure, there's bottom line sobriety and things like that, but as far as is kissing her okay? Well, it might be okay for me, but it might not be okay for somebody else. But my sponsor knows my situation. He knows what's healthy for me and what's not healthy. And so having that accountability, I didn't, as well, like Marla said, I didn't just come out and vomit all of my recovery stuff onto her the first time I met her, you know. but, you know, and then there's that question, oh, when's the right time to tell them about, you know, my recovery and my addictive past and things like that. And in my history and the various people I've dated that I've told my story to, the moment just kind of makes itself apparent, you know. I pray about it and ask God, and it just seems like, wow, we're sitting here and she's sharing something really intimate. Seems like the right moment, you know. And it's always worked out that way for me. And when I try and make it happen, it never happens, or I screw it up or something. But when I just kind of sit back and let God make that happen, then it works out. So I guess if the one thing that I could leave you guys with is, you know, just keep talking about what's going on. Secrets absolutely kill me. I cannot have secrets. I need to end my day every day having told somebody what went on in my head today or what went on. Because so I can go to sleep with a clean slate. Tomorrow I can wake up with a clean slate because there's going to be enough garbage that I pick up throughout the day. And if I have to start the day behind the eight ball because of stuff from the day before, I'm just that much worse for the wear. So I need to absolutely check in with people every day, especially when I'm dating. And like I said, with the whole healthy sexuality and that sort of thing, you know, we are created as sexual beings. You know, it's really easy, it was for me, to shut that down and just deny sexuality altogether. And it's really a scary thing to say, okay, now how do I kind of turn that on a little bit, you know? And, you know, hoping that the floodgates just don't, you know, go back to my addictive past. But the difference today is I don't have to do everything that goes through my head. And I have people that I can talk to about it. And I'm definitely not on this journey alone. And you don't have to either. So I think I will wrap this up. And I absolutely did not follow that at all. So so it must have been what God wanted. So what we would like to do now is if any of you, because I'm sure some of you have also experienced sober dating, if you have any experience, strength, and hope that you'd like to share, or if you have a particular question that you'd like to throw out there, maybe Marla and I might have some insight, or maybe some of you. But remember, it is recorded, so if you don't want your question on tape, don't come up. But all right, thank you.
Hello, my name is Debbie, and I'm a recovering sexaholic. I really never dated that much. And I was engaged once, though, to a minister. It turned out that he ended up being a pedophile. My question is, and I'm also sexually anorexic, I'm trying to get over that, but I don't know what safe dating is. I don't even know. I was in the women's meeting, the last meeting, and they started talking about how, oh, you know when you're giving off the wrong vibes, and I'm going, no. I have no idea. I know that with one gentleman, I'm a nurse, he was a doctor, he says, oh, let's just sit in eye gaze. Okay, and I was telling my therapist, he goes, oh, is that sexy? You got to be kidding. I mean, I don't know, so I'm afraid, I would love to be married, but I am really afraid. I don't know what's right, what's wrong, the extreme, sure, but how do you know when it's safe if this guy, in one aspect, it's like I'm afraid to date anybody because what if they are a sexaholic like this guy was and I didn't pick up on anything? Or what if they aren't, but I still don't know what's normal and what I may do? So it's a very scary situation for me. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie.
Thank you for that question, Debbie. I went through those same sorts of things myself. One of the most helpful and yet unhelpful pieces of information I was ever given, and it's one I repeat to my sponsees to this day, is, well, you'll know when you need a boundary about the time you pass it. In specific reference to the question, as Rob pointed out, I think one of the main things is making sure that you are talking with someone or a couple of someone's that are trusted, whether that's program related, if you have some kind of therapist or other professional that you work with. Being honest and being open about what is going on. Somebody's going to tell you if you're going into dicey territory. Rob was very, very right on that. And I know for me, one of the things that I was told literally by my sponsor was, you know, you are far enough in your process that you're going to know when something is wrong. You're going to know when something doesn't feel right. If you don't feel that, that means one of two things. Either where you're going is a pathway that is okay, and again, you can bounce that off your sounding boards. You can get affirmation or confirmation of that from people that you're talking to. Or you are at a place where the person that you're attracting, you're on the same level of maybe not as healthy, or you may be healthy in some areas, but in one you're not particularly. That was my experience. You know, I think the most important piece to that, as Rob said, is to keep talking about it. If you're seeking direction with healthy people whom you trust and who really do have your best interests at heart, your sponsors really do. I know my sponsor does. They're not going to lead you down a path that is wrong. And trust that your higher power is not going to put people in your path that are going to lead you down a path that's wrong. So, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, absolutely. And just the whole dating thing is this gigantic leap of faith. You know, it was for me. You know, I'm going out here. I don't know what I'm doing. My mind, I'm so black and white, like I said, that I want to do it perfectly. Tell me exactly what to do and what's okay and what's not okay, and I'll follow the list of okay. And there is no list out there that I found. And so it's almost like trial and error, but you're talking with people the whole time, and what works for you and what's healthy and okay for you starts to form itself. And that's really just what had to work for me. And it's a scary place to be, because I'm so used to when I first came in, here's the list. This is exactly what it means to be sober in SA. And wow, now I'm kind of stepping outside the black and white, and it's a really scary thing. And that's why the support system and the talking and everything. And she's absolutely right. You'll go, oops, that was a little too far. We need a boundary there. You know, and those kinds of things are great learning experiences. I thought it'd be the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It's a great learning experience. I talk about it. Don't keep it a secret. I learn from it, move on. It helps me the next time around and that sort of thing. So it kind of starts forming itself. But, yeah, it's a huge leap of faith because it's a really scary place to be. But there's other people that have journeyed before, so keep talking about it.
There's one more thing I want to add to that, something you said that brought this up. Something else that I think was really important for me was the idea that I was never taught to do this. I was never taught to do this in a healthy manner. I did not have people, and I have a very old family. I mean, I saw great-grandparents and grandparents, and so I had the benefit and the curse of being able to see three or four generations back the disease in my family. I was not taught to do this in a healthy manner. So the fact that I was expecting myself to do it perfectly was totally not the place I needed to be. I am not going to do it perfectly. I do not have the skills. I didn't have the skills, and even today, being a spouse, I don't have the skills because I did not have those things patterned to me. I have to go to people whom I trust, who I see, who have something that I want to gain that knowledge and experience from them, see what works for me, and leave the rest. So if you're coming in with the expectation that you should be able to date perfectly right out of the chute, keep coming back.
Hi, I'm Brian. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Brian.
I see some of my brothers from Chicago here. I wanted to share my experience of not dating sober. Around this whole idea of attracting like people. And it took me some time to realize this, but I've been sober 7 months. I've been broken up from my girlfriend for about 6 months. And it took me all this time, and actually from a brother in Akron who helped me see the light that that was not a healthy relationship. I was in the relationship for about a year and a half, and we were sexual probably after our third or fourth date, I think it was. And I shared that with my sponsor. I've been in the program for about almost 5 years already. And about a year and a half mark, I said, I'm ready to date. And my sponsor said, okay. So I dated this woman for a year and a half. And like I said, it was kind of an ugly relationship, at least now that I see it, because I was unhealthy, and now I realize that she was unhealthy too. And the way it broke up, we broke up, is I had disclosed to her my SA program at about after 3 months of dating, and she was okay with it. She participated in couples meetings. We went to S&N couples meetings, and we went to SA opens together, and it was wonderful. I thought, here's a woman who understands me and accepts me, and I thought, this is great. This is the one woman I'm going to marry. But like I say, 6 months ago, she told me that she couldn't support me anymore in my program. So I was heartbroken. I really was, because I thought she was the woman who I thought understood my problem, and she was okay with it. But now I realize she was just as sick as me. And it came to a head when she wanted to cross my boundary. And my boundary was using a condom. And she said, I don't want to use a condom anymore. And I said, I can't cross that boundary. So that tells me that, we weren't married, so I can't not use a condom. And why she didn't want to use one, it's still a mystery to me. I don't know why she wanted to cross that boundary with me. So it was kind of scary. So I'm happy. I'm happy that I have my God, my program, my brothers, and my sponsor who helped me see that I learned a lot from that program, from that experience. And in the program, I'm sure probably another year from now, I'll probably be more ready and more healthy to date again. So I wanted to share that experience with you to say that, you know, I thought everything was okay. But wow, my addict was active, and he was there. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, I'm Tanya. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic.
Hey, Tanya.
And I told my sponsor almost apologetically that I was going to this meeting because my problem has been in dating. I don't know how to date sober. Even my ex-husband, you know, we acted out before marriage. Thankfully, we did have a good, solid relationship before we got sexual, and for a long time, the marriage was good. But I don't know how to date sober. And so I kind of said it apologetically. Not that I'm ready to date, I said. She said, well, you've got over 2 years of sobriety. You can date. Huh? What? And one thing that I've discovered, someone talked about vibes earlier. When I was insisting on being in the program but still dating, I put out the kind of vibes that got me guys that wanted to act out. And, of course, I thought that was the way to keep guys. So I acted out. And then, of course, the guy went running away after that because he got what he wanted. He didn't want a relationship. He wanted sex. And so I finally got into a relationship. In fact, when I was here 3 years ago, I was actively acting out, even though I was at the convention. I was with the guy who also claimed to be in the program, and we didn't go to very many meetings, we'll just put it that way. And we went out a lot, actually. We went out and did the town and that kind of thing, but we weren't looking for recovery, and in the 6 months that I dated him, I was in the hospital for depression 3 times. And that should have been a clue that the relationship wasn't going anywhere. Well, we broke up 2.5 years ago. He broke up with me because he didn't think I was healthy, which I wasn't. And I haven't been in the hospital for depression in that whole 2.5 years. In fact, this has been my most stable recovery in that 2.5 years. But what I find now is I mentioned to my sponsor that no one has asked me out in 2.5 years. And she said, well, you know, it's the vibes you put out. So I'm like, okay, so I guess I know how to put out vibes for unhealthy men. And I know how to put out vibes for no men. How does one put out vibes for healthy men and healthy relationships? I don't know. And it may not, you know, I don't think it's something that can be taught. I think I just have to do it by trial and error. But I'm still not quite sure I'm ready to date, but I think I'm more ready than I was 6 months or a year, or certainly more than 2.5 years ago. So thanks for having this. Thanks.
And one thing that she mentioned that kind of jogged my memory too about, you know, when I was first coming to the program and getting to know women, you know, I thought in my mind, well, the best place to find women to date would be in the fellowship, right? And, you know, in my experience, I did not date anybody in the program. But, you know, you sit in meetings and you get to know somebody's story, and, wow, they're really healthy and that sort of thing. And but in my experience in seeing other people who have dated folks in the fellowship, it has never worked out for them. I don't know, I just know for me, if I were to date somebody that was in the fellowship, I think all of a sudden that group that I was in would become an unsafe place for me to share what's going on. Because I can never talk about, well, we went on a date last, well, she might be in the meeting, or they all know who it is. And so, you know, for me, that was a boundary I had, that I wasn't going to date anybody in the program. Not that I didn't want to, but I just didn't think for me that was going to be a healthy thing. So I know some people have that issue, but...
All right. Hey, I'm Mike. I'm a sexaholic.
Hey, Mike.
I'm not up here to give dating tips. I've really got a question. You know, in my acting out, it was really isolating. I was by myself if I was acting out. I hadn't gotten to the prostitute section yet. But, you know, so the question I have is basically, how do you tell the difference between being attracted to a woman and lusting? Because, you know, like someone said earlier, it's I've always just said, you know, if I'm attracted to someone, it's got to be lust, because that's just the way it's always been for me. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That one took me a long time, and someday, it depends. If on a good day when I'm feeling really healthy, I don't have a problem deciphering the two. Some days they're still really convoluted, where I think, is it lust? Is it attraction? I don't know. I remember early in recovery driving down the street and just, oh, woman, oh, and I turned my head, you know, and it's a woman walking down the street, you know. But that was my way of shutting down everything, because I was so fearful. But how to tell the difference between lust and natural attraction? I think from my experience on that, you know, if I notice a woman and in my mind say, wow, I think she's really attractive, and I just go on with my day, probably just natural attraction. If I go, wow, that's a really attractive woman. Wow. You know, and I keep looking at her or I keep thinking about it, you know. It's like, wow, I wonder how I can get her number. Wow. And I keep thinking about how her body looks or something like that. You know, when that obsession starts to kick in, then I think for me, I've crossed it into lust. And I've heard Harvey speak here in Nashville quite a lot, and he's saying, you know, we addicts, that's what we do, we obsess, you know. For most people, they go and eat a good steak, and after that, oh, that's a good steak, and they just go on with their day. But for addicts like us, man, that's a good steak. I wonder when I can get another steak like that. That was really good. Man, you know, and we're thinking about that steak for the next 3 days, you know, and how can I get another one? And so, you know, the difference between lust and attraction, and that's another thing that I just can't do perfectly. You know, sometimes like it kind of feels like lust, but it may be, and I'm playing this game in my head. So a lot of times I just have to call somebody and say, this is what happened. You know, I don't know if it's lust, if it is or whatever, you know, or if it's just natural attraction. For me, I was so isolating, and I was so leaning towards the anorexic, sexual anorexic side, that for me, you know, I probably needed to kind of push it, like, to acknowledge that is just regular sexual attraction. Now, some people, they come from a different side where they need to kind of lean towards one way or the other. But talking about it and then just recognizing what goes on in my head when I see that person, if I can let it go, it's probably a pretty healthy thing. So.
Okay, all right.
Hi, I'm Travis. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic. One thing I want to share and then a question that I have. The first thing that I want to share is one thing that I have to continuously check in is not only my lust, but the statement, we lusted and we wanted to be lusted after. I have to check that one in also. The actions that I do, it's almost like rote memory that I do something, and then I stop it and think, why am I doing that? And it's all because I'm going to be meeting this person, I'm going to be around this person, I'm going to see this person or this piece. For my profession, I'm in front of people a lot, and I have to continuously check that one in, that why am I doing it just for personal hygiene? Or, you know, is it actually because I want to try to draw some attention to me and have someone attracted to me? So for the dating one, I have to be real careful about why am I going to this place, or why am I talking to this person, or why am I saying these things? Even recovery, healthy stuff, you know, I'm like, oh, I can use this. That person will be attracted to my language or whatever. It's wanting to be lusted after. And then the question that I have, one thing that I really struggle with is one person in my fellowship uses the term stories that go on. I have to be really careful with the stories or the picture of what a guy looks like in society, what a real man looks like or what a real woman looks like. And you can paint it in whether it's GQ and Vogue version or whether it's Bible versions of those. What does a godly man look like? What does a godly woman look like? Right now, I have to really focus on what do I look like in this program and not fall into the story. So if I could, the question would be, how do you keep those stories as stories of what I'm supposed to look like or what my future spouse is supposed to look like, and just focus on what I look like right here, right now in the program. Does that make sense? Okay. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Travis.
Thank you, Travis, for that question. I want to comment on what you shared, too, about wanting to be lusted after. One of the things that I also had to do in my program was clean out my closet. Anybody here understand what a grooming behavior is? Anybody familiar with that term? For those who don't, it's talking about kind of you're laying the breadcrumbs to attract the person. That's kind of how I picture it in my head, laying a breadcrumb trail to kind of lure the person in. I know for me, part of my addiction was also being predatory, in that I wanted to seek out the attention. I wanted to be lusted after so bad. And a lot of that for me was done through dress. One of the things that I had to do was go through and clean out my closet. I cannot own the color red. Can't do it. I have a red Christmas sweater that is very, very Christmas. And it is the only thing, the only red, I know y'all laugh. And y'all think it's funny. I mean, it is funny. It's funny to me. I cannot wear the color red. I can't do it. For me, that was something that I used in my addiction. There's also a favorite perfume that I had. I can't wear that anymore because I used that perfume as part of my addiction and part of my acting out. So there are things about that you have to stop and think about when you're wanting to be lusted after as well. But also to your question, the stories in your head. I know for me, when I got married, my husband is actually much more of a romantic than I am. We joke that our roles are reversed. I'm the very practical one, and he's the very, oh, love, you know, it's so wonderful. And there are times that he suffers from great disillusionment in our marriage because it's not, you know, Ozzy and Harriet, or it's not what he sees in the romantic comedies or things like that. And I know for me, when I come up against that, I was an athlete in high school. I'm not a small girl. I'm never going to be a small girl because I just have 44-inch wide shoulders. I'm built like a middle linebacker. You know, that's just how I am. And I struggled for a long time with body image. I really did. You know, I was not that size zero. I'm never going to be a size zero. I might get to a size 10, and that's a good day. I had to become okay with me, and a lot of that is about self-esteem. I know for me, trying to comparing my insides to the outsides of others, we hear that in these rooms, and it is a lot about self-esteem for me. And as I continue to work my program and grow my self-esteem, those things, while still a problem, I can walk past the Vogue covers and say, oh, I wish I could look good in that dress, but I don't have the body type or body shape for that, and I can let that go today. But it was about becoming healthy with who I am. An affirmation that I was given early on in the program was, God loves me today just as I am. And in the beginning, that was about emotional health and emotional. But as over time, that came to take on a physical aspect too, that my higher power loves me today just as I am, you know, whether that's dressed to the nines, with my hair and makeup done, or like I am today in, you know, very hobo chic attire. So God still loves me. My higher power still loves me. So the self-esteem part, I think, is real important to putting those stories out of your head. You have to be okay. You have to love the person you are, warts and all, as a friend of mine would say. So thanks. We're actually about 5 minutes over. I think there were a couple people over here that had questions. He hasn't stopped. So come on up. We'll take the last two questions, and then we'll be done for the day.
Hi, my name is Chris. I'm new at all this. I wrote my questions down. When it's finally okay to date, can we only date SA or SNI? And once we do start dating, should the mate, if they're not in SNI, should they join SNI?
Thanks, Chris.
That's a good question. Like I said, my personal thing was I wasn't going to date anybody in the SA program. As far as SNI, you know, that'd be a personal. My wife is not in a 12-step program herself, but you know, I know a lot of people that do, and they go to recovery things together, couples meetings, things like that. It's really hard to say that, you know, yeah, you got to find a person like this or find a person like that. What I have found is that your higher power will put that person in your life or those types of people in your life. You know, and it just depends on your social circle. You know, if you're just around recovery people most of the time, then probably somebody will be in recovery that comes around. But, yeah, it's hard to say that one's going to be one and one's going to be the other. I would say just kind of leave that up to your higher power. I know in my addiction, I wanted to, you know, make that happen or find that one perfect person. And it's really hard to sit back and just kind of surrender that, you know. At one point, I was just praying to God, you know, I want to be married. You haven't given me a wife yet, so either take away that desire or bring somebody. You know, I just got that. This is my desperation prayer, you know. So, you know, because I believe my higher power is not out to torture me today. So, you know, if he's placed that desire, you know, I think that he's going to probably fulfill it in some way. Most likely not the way that I think it's going to happen, because I tend to think things happen ways that probably aren't healthiest for me. So I don't know if that really answers the question, but do you have anything you want to add?
Very short.
We'll get a woman's perspective.
As far as dating someone in a recovery program, my personal experience would be to run screaming in the other direction. If you're sitting in the same room, again, it's about like attracting like. And they have their own sets of issues, as you do as well. My spouse does also not participate in SNI. There are days that he definitely qualifies more than others. But that is his journey. And I am not responsible for him, and I cannot take his inventory. You know, I am responsible for my side of the street, and as long as my side of the street is clean, you know, that's all I can do today. So, thanks. Did we have anyone else? All right. Well, then we will close. Let's see if I can read this. Anything you've heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant, and the principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. If I could get everyone to stand, we will close with the Lord's Prayer. And I'd like to thank everyone for participating today. We did run over a little bit, and that is always a good thing because there was a lot of good to share here. A moment of silence for those in and out of these rooms who are still suffering. Who loves us unconditionally? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and we're worth it.
Thank you, guys.
Very Thank you.
Helpful. Very much. I'm at the point of telling women, no, I am interested because it's easy for me, but it's interesting. It seems like I am.